Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Liberty and the Law, the podcast series that examines the critical elements of a strong legal defense in criminal cases. Join respected attorney James Doerr for this lively discussion on the rights of criminal defendants and the important role defense attorneys play in our legal system.
Well, we've got one of those things that, as often happens here, we kind of reach into the headlines to find some of our topics on liberty and the law. And we're going to do that today, but I think we're going to kind of look for a little direction and perhaps some assistance as we try and sort through what maybe those headlines really mean. Hi, everybody. This is Jim Mitchell. And so much of what we see and read about in the news right now refers back in many ways to the U.S. Constitution and people trying to, call out certain aspects of it and identify certain aspects of it for their own benefit, but we're going to learn a little bit more about what really takes place and surrounds that document. Joining me, of course, is Attorney James Doerr of Lavelle Law, and James is here on a regular basis to talk about this document and other things related to the justice system. And James, I think this one is really going to be a kind of fun one for us to handle today, isn't it?
I enjoy these kind of discussions, Jim, and so it's good to be back on, and I think we have some fun stuff to talk about here.
Good. So, let's start with the document itself. It was written. We all know sort of the history of it, but this really becomes the framework for many of our laws, and it's sort of the basis for so much of what we do in the judicial system, isn't it?
It is correct. That is the foundation. It is the framework upon which all else is built, the foundation upon which everything is built. So that constitutional framework, it applies to the states. It protects individuals in our freedoms, our civil liberties. And it's quite a powerful document and sends a signal as to the importance of the individual, and it's really quite a remarkable document. I don't know where to begin, Jim, but
it's
remarkable,
it.
And all the everyday things it touches upon.
Yeah, so let's talk about it, because there's two ways to look at it, I think, that we can dig into a little bit today. The first is, how it creates sort of a basis for the law and the things that you do in your daily work when you walk into a courtroom, and then, as you say, just the things that sort of touch us, in our everyday lives and sort of some of the things that are sort of established in that. You go into court on a regular basis. You work as a defense attorney. Tell me about some of the things that you draw from the Constitution in working in the courtroom, some of the things that are provided in terms of rights to protect people in our justice system.
Well, sure. And I think people are used to hearing about certain rights that we all have, so rights of the accused. And the Constitution and Bill of Rights in particular points out or spells out these rights, these bare minimums, that as a citizen you're entitled to these protections, okay? And then under that kind of that realm of rights of the accused, these are the things that I would experience on a daily basis in the criminal courts. So, the process, we're entitled to trials, and trials are protected under the Sixth Amendment and other provisions, but we have a right to a speedy trial, right to a public trial, and right to a jury trial. They're all spelled out that these are guaranteed, and that you have a right to remain silent, not to be compelled to be a witness against yourself. So there's certain fundamental fairness principles that are spelled out in the Constitution that need to be complied with. Other things we've touched upon in the past, Jim, search and seizure law. Go ahead, Jim. I'm sorry.
Well, I just want to refer back because of what you just mentioned, and we had a discussion earlier as we were preparing for this podcast, and you spun a phrase that I liked a lot when talking about the Constitution providing protection for the accused. And if I got it right, I think you said that the process can be punishment if not done right. And what did you mean by that?
Well, sometimes the process can be the punishment. Somebody who's otherwise innocent of a crime still has to go through the process of defending oneself. So we have these protections, these guarantees that ensure that a process will be fair, but it's still a heck of a process where You know, a person still has to obtain a lawyer. If they're not indigent, they have to pay for their own lawyer, and they have to maybe face a grand jury process if you're looking at indictments that way. And at the trial itself or at the hearing process in trials, we have these rights that are guaranteed. So the accused, it doesn't say the guilty shall have these rights. It's the accused.
Mm-hmm.
So it's protections for those of us that are innocent. And that's the key. You know, we're presumed innocent under the law. And these protections are there to guarantee that somebody who's an innocent person, who's accused of a crime, can defend oneself and is not put in a position where they, compelled to defend themselves, but the process itself provides those protections.
And your job is never easy, but I have to imagine that having those protections spelled out and putting some burden on the prosecution to prove guilt, those are important things for you to build your case around and to always represent as you go into the courtroom to ensure that those things that are called for are upheld.
That's something fair. Like, say, that the police need to have a warrant before they can come into your house. I think most people would agree to that. So if there's evidence of wrongdoing, that's fine. Go see a judge first. But you have to do that. You can't just walk into somebody's house. That's fairness of the process. And the same thing with the trial. You know, you're entitled to carry that presumption of innocence throughout the trial. And a prosecutor has to prove you guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. You know, that's something else that, they bear the burden of proving guilt. And those are valuable considerations to protect the individual, one sovereign individual, to protect that person from the power, the overreaching power of the government.
And I want to talk about the process around the Constitution here in just a minute. But as we talk about various protections, many of them come up frequently in our discussions. Search and seizure, as you mentioned. There's also other things that are spelled out in here that maybe you don't encounter on a regular basis, but whether it's, rights to worship or right to a peaceful assembly and protest, perhaps you don't see those a lot. But, boy, if you look in headlines at what happens in other countries, you see the significance of this document and what it really provides for.
The things that we take for granted on an individual, we take on a daily basis that affect our freedoms. I mean, these things, We vote. We can vote on a regular basis. There's elections coming around every 2-4 years, and plus local ones that happen more frequently. We're given the opportunity to vote, and we don't have to vote. We're not compelled to. We have a freedom to vote or not to vote. I think that's important. Free speech. We have the right to say and write what we think. There's many parts of the world where you cannot do that. If you criticize the sovereign leader, you could find yourself in prison. It doesn't happen here. People are on the street saying very nasty things about elected public officials, and they're not getting taken off the street. And they're criticizing, from one end of the spectrum to the other, the politicians are criticized and getting locked up for it. So that is what the value of free speech is. We can say and do what we want. There's a kind of a release valve there, because if we can't say what we want to say, if we don't have that option to speak out loud and debate, then what's left? Violent means. So it's an important step that people can express themselves.
Well, some important things I want to get to today, and it's funny in talking about this. It seems like a long time ago. Some of us were preparing to take the Constitution exam in high school, and probably the last time a lot of us have studied the importance of that document. So we're doing a quick refresher today with Lavelle Law attorney James Doerr. If you're a regular listener of the podcast, you should be familiar with James's work. If not, go ahead and swing over to lavellelaw.com when this discussion ends, and you'll get his profile, his background, as well as articles, videos, podcasts, a great collection there.
Absolutely. We have a great website, and I encourage the people to look at that, and then the other attorneys here as well have some excellent articles and podcasts.
Full of content, you're right about that, on a number of different legal topics, many of them timely, many of them, as we're talking about today, rooted deeply in law that goes back many years, hundreds of years, in the case of the Constitution. And that's a great point, because some people say, well, that document's so old, it can't be relevant. But in that document is the amendment process, which really defeats the argument that because we can provide updates whenever we want. I mean, that's a critical part of the Constitution, is the ability to change it.
The founders knew that they were human, and they knew that they weren't angels. So they thought this process, there needs to be a process in order to amend the Constitution. And it's built in. I mean, and there's a couple different ways to do it, and the people can be very involved in this, and the states can be very involved in this. So, you know, if there's something that there's an overwhelming support in the country to change, it can be done. It's there.
And maybe people probably don't even realize, but talk about that citizen input. I mean, if you want, if there's a need for a change to the Constitution, as you said, it filters down to the states, and residents have the opportunity to speak up and be a part of it. Can you just define a little bit about how that happens? I know we've got examples with the 18th and 21st, and kind of walk us through that, how that all took place as well.
Well, I think ultimately the citizen always has the right, through voting, to express their point of view and make sure that they have elected officials that are expressing their point of view. And even if they don't, they still have a right to, to contact that representative. So whichever process you're starting with, let's say it's done through a ratification process in the federal government, well, the legislators are still responsive to citizens and their points of view. So, they calculate in different ways what a letter means, what an email means, what a phone call means, how many people that represents, other than the person calling, right? They know that it represents a certain amount of people in that district to feel that way. So they're responsive to the voter. But also, if it's done through a state process where there's a constitutional convention and the states would be involved in the ratification process, the state legislatures are closer to the population than the federal government. So presumably the same thing. Citizens can get involved, they can get behind efforts, they can draft support for the efforts and get people out and support it. So it's one of those things that citizen input is very important.
And the process of drafting and approving an amendment to the Constitution, on one hand, we have a right to do that, we have the opportunity, it's part of central to the document, but it's also not an easy process. But as you said, I think the Founding Fathers sort of did that by design. They want the opportunity, but they don't want it to be frivolous.
They don't like wide sweeping fast changes. If you notice, they set up different provisions, so such as elected representatives nationally. President serves for 4 years. Senate serves 6 years, so it's less likely to be responsive in the Senate. But the House, they switch over every 2 years, the full House. So they're very responsive to the electorate. And that's where the change kind of was meant to be, more the change to be reflected at the House. On a Senate level, that takes a little bit longer there. So the process is supposed to take time. So there's no fast changes, that these are important decisions that need to be thoroughly, thought out and contemplated before there's a permanent change, such as an amendment to the Constitution. So the process may be seem a little laborious, but it's that way for a reason. So you don't have fast changes when an amendment is proposed, that it's well thought out.
And before I let you go here, about a minute or so left, but ultimately, once something is, in the Constitution, it then is open to debate. I mean, and people like you and your peers over the years will sort of argue the point, what the intention was, and it, in that regard, between the judicial system and courts and trials, it sort of changes and evolves and takes different meaning as it's tried in different ways, and that's part of the process that you're involved in.
Absolutely. The courts interpret the Constitution and different legislative provisions as well. Any law could be interpreted, and so that's what judges look at, trying to faithfully implement the laws. But there's always arguments from prosecutors or defense attorneys what certain constitutional provisions mean, and they'll ask for certain relief based on that. So it's a process where there's advocates on either side. And the conflict is resolved in the courts where it should be, not in the streets.
Well, I'm not sure we resolved anything today, but I just really enjoyed the opportunity to talk about it. We reference it so often. So, James Doerr, thanks for being with us and sharing some information. on the United States Constitution. We've got some great topics lined up as we turn the calendar for 2020. Look forward to having you join us for future editions of Liberty and the Law. And thanks, everyone, for listening. We will talk to you soon.